You know, the holiday season is a wonderful time of year when we can all wax poetic about lost loves after a nasty bender in a New York City drunk tank.
The boys of the NYPD choir were singing going by, and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to Decomposition Podcast, where we hyperanalyze all of your favorite terrible songs. My name is Brad, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Katie. Katie, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well, and you know, I want to comment on your intro.
Okay, please.
The part of the song you mentioned is actually like the happier start to an even more tragic story.
You think that like the drunk tank, that's the highlight of this guy's Christmas is what you're saying.
Yeah, although I kind of think the song spans many years of Christmases or okay. Several years of Christmases. And we can get into that in more detail.
Yeah, we will. I feel confident that we will, in fact, get into that in more detail.
That's what we're here to do.
That's the whole reason we started this podcast. We are recording on the rare Monday night, which of course means we're in jammies.
We're in jammies.
We are recording in jammies.
There are no beverages other than water.
I was going to say zero alcohol, a little bit of coughing. We're both getting over a touch of the sick.
Yep. And? Yep.
And?
No guest.
Not a single guest to be found. Just you, me, and the dog hanging out, which we haven't done this in a while.
I can't remember the last episode that we did without a guest.
No, it may have been Kiss from a Rose.
That sounds right.
That was ages ago.
What was that?
That was
June?
July.
July?
June, it was ages ago.
It was like 6 months ago.
So the song we are here to discuss today is the 1987 hit by the Pogues featuring Christy McCall. It is Fairy Tale of New York. Now, this song is off of the Pogues' 1987 album, If I Should Fall from Grace with God. I think you'll be surprised to hear that this song never charted in the United States.
What?
Not once has it charted. I feel like I've heard this song so many times since 1987.
Right.
I know that they used to play it on VH1 around Christmas all of the time when I was growing up. Yeah, it was released as a single in 1987, or excuse me, the album came out in 88. It was released as a single in 87. It has reached the UK's top 20 on 14 separate occasions.
I mean, that's not a big surprise.
No.
It's a UK-based band.
Right.
You know, so the fact that it would chart there rather than here, and the fact that it would come back again and again.
Year after year, like every single year.
It's a Christmas song, that makes sense. You know, those are songs that come back every year.
I think what's interesting is that this is not much of a Christmas song. This takes place on Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, the entire song centers around events that happen on Christmas or Christmas Eve. So in that respect, it's definitely a Christmas song.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's more of a Christmas song than Baby It's Cold Outside, which doesn't talk about Christmas at all.
So excellent segue.
Oh, thank you.
By the way.
It was by accident.
That was, well, you nailed it. You really killed it. Because before we get into this song, I was hoping you would take the lead on this, on this whole story about this radio station trying to ban Baby It's Cold Outside.
Right. So this might be a little bit of old news by the time this episode comes out.
When this comes out, that will have happened
like a week and a half ago.
Right.
So this story that we're going to talk about right now, in the real time of when this episode comes out, which is December, I don't know, something or other, 12th,
that
I think.
Right.
December 12th.
Something or other.
This story will be about a week and a half or so old.
Right.
And hey, if you're listening to this episode 6 months from now, the story's really old, but
everybody will have had forgotten about it by then.
We'll talk about it anyway. So there's a Cleveland radio station. Okay, it's Cleveland radio station Star 102 stopped playing the Christmas song Baby It's Cold Outside. And we shouldn't say that they banned the song Baby It's Cold Outside, but radio host Glenn Anderson wrote a blog post about the station's decision to stop playing the song. So the station has taken the definitive position that the song shouldn't be played because it's no longer appropriate in the era of Me Too. I'm quoting the CBS News article. And that basically, in a modern context, the song is offensive and doesn't have a good message behind it.
Right.
So this sparked a conversation on Twitter. And the way that it came around to us, it's interesting. I guess this was just Sunday morning. I got up and I was looking at Twitter. I was awake by myself. And I noticed that Jen Kirkman, who's a comedian,
right,
had tweeted about this. This is how I found out about the story in the first place. And she basically made the argument that people need to chill over Baby It's Cold Outside, that it's not necessarily a date rape song, which is what people first go to when they criticize the song.
Specifically because of one lyric in the song, the line, "So what's in this drink?" Now, we have commented about it being a rapey song. In fact, our last episode with Donald, that gets brought up as kind of a joke,
yes,
is that it's a rapey song. And then we say something about, hey, what's in this drink?
Mm-hmm. Jen Kirkman did share that, "Say what's in this drink" is an old movie line from the 30s. That means I'm telling the truth. I haven't looked into that further, but it could be true. And her issue with the song was more that it plays into this double standard in the way that we view women's sexuality. And the problem isn't that he's going to date rape her or something. The problem is that she can't stay over, even if she wants to, and she feels like she has to make an excuse. And Jen Kirkman even shared an interesting article from Persephone Magazine, which is an online women's pop culture magazine. And the article is called "Listening Well Feminist in Defense of Baby It's Cold Outside." And it goes into basically the same arc. That the song isn't about a man who's going to roofie and date rape this woman.
Right.
It's about a woman who maybe wants to spend the night with this guy, but can't because of societal pressures.
Sure. You know, she talks about like how her family will be suspicious and her father will be there at the door.
She says something about her maiden aunt as well. But as several people pointed out, even on Kirkman's posts, there is a clear point in the song where the woman says, "I gotta say no, no, no."
Uh-huh.
Right. In a modern context, that should be like end of conversation, song over.
Right, right, right.
Of course, the song was written in the 40s. So, you know, we're dealing with like a totally different societal moment.
Right.
So, long story longer. Our listener, Carmen, I guess, happened to see this Jen Kirkman post as well. And it was just a coincidence that, you know, she saw and I saw it on the same morning. And she tweeted over to us an interesting article she links to at the end of the thread. "Changed my opinion of the song at Decomposition Pod. What do you think?" And so then Carmen and I had our own kind of dialogue about the song and why it might be problematic and whether or not it's valid to stop playing it.
Now, you had made a comment. I don't know if you included this in your back and forth with Carmen, but you said something about how you were comparing it to Mark Twain and Huck Finn. Just because there's offensive language in there doesn't necessarily mean it shouldn't be read. Now, could you elaborate on that? I'm not remembering exactly how you put it.
Sure. That was actually in response to a really great point that was made by Carmen when she reached out to us. So I had said that I didn't love the song because of the double standard in it, but I also wasn't on board for censoring it.
Sure.
And Carmen replied that she agrees with me on the censoring thing. She said, "I agree with you on the censoring thing, but if one station doesn't want to play an old song, I don't know if that's the same as censorship. There's a lot of songs I don't hear on the radio, not because they're banned, but probably because the station thinks people don't want to hear it." So that was what Carmen said. And then she went on to say, she made a great point. I just got to find it. That she was kind of making the point that, you know, this is a big deal over a relatively small issue.
Yeah.
She said, it's a song that gets played for a month each year. We aren't talking about To Kill a Mockingbird here. I like that people are thinking about it and talking about it. The whole conversation reminded me of the 99 Problems episode. To be clear, I love To Kill a Mockingbird and think it should be taught in school. If something makes you uncomfortable, don't ignore it. Discuss it, learn from it, help others learn from it, and then do better and help others do better. That was such a beautiful comment from Carmen. If something makes you uncomfortable, don't ignore it, talk about it, and then do better and help each other do better.
Yeah.
I agree with that 1000%, which is why, okay, on one hand, maybe it's good that the radio station is bringing up this point about the song because at least it's garnering some discussion.
Uh-huh.
But I wouldn't sweep the song under the rug. I would say, like, let's talk about it.
We have to acknowledge that this was a part of pop culture for a minute there. It's like the movie Birth of a Nation.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. I mean, I've watched Birth of a Nation, or parts of it, actually, in classes in college as an undergraduate, not for the purpose of celebrating it, but for the purpose of discussing it.
Sure.
So if we throw this song out the window, not because it's old-fashioned, but because it's offensive, then that does, like, the modern culture a disservice.
It doesn't help us to learn.
Right. And that was kind of what I was saying about Mark Twain to you the other day.
Yeah.
Because I'm not about banning books, so I'm not about banning songs either. If we ban Huckleberry Finn because the N-word is used in it, then we're keeping it from doing exactly what Carmen was talking about. It might make you uncomfortable, but it's something worth discussing in order to do better. Also, Mark Twain isn't necessarily using the N-word in a racist context. He's using the language of
his time.
Actually, I don't know I haven't read Huckleberry Finn in so long. I don't know how that book stands up, under a microscope when it comes to how racist or not racist it feels. So let me not put my full
stamp of approval. Who has that in their curriculum is what you need to do.
I haven't read Huckleberry Finn since like maybe middle. So I don't even think I understood the book at all. So I should back off from saying whether or not the book actually comes across as racist in a modern context.
Do you remember liking it as much as Tom Sawyer?
Well, you know, I don't like Rush. So.
That said, I still don't think we should hyperanalyze the song Baby It's Cold Outside, because it is low-hanging fruit.
Oh, it is. I mean, it's just so easy to find things that are wrong with it. Plus, like, I have a complex relationship with that song. When I was a little kid, my friend Suzanne, her mom had this, like, tape of hits we used to sing along to, like tape of old hits. And that happened to be one of the songs in it. And I used to love to sing along to Baby It's Cold Outside until I got to be like a teenager and I thought about the words and I changed my mind about it altogether.
But that said, are you ready to hyperanalyze Fairy Tale of New York?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's put Baby It's Cold Outside behind and get into this totally different song.
Jump forward in time 40 some odd years to the year 1987/1988. So I don't know. How do you want to start talking about this?
How did we pick this song?
I don't know. I think it was... I don't know. I think I just wanted to pick a better song. You know, it's a story song by a band that did not have other hit songs.
Right.
It's a one-hit wonder. It's not really, but it is a Christmas song, but it's not really, but it is.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It's like a sad Christmas song.
I just teared up while we were watching the video.
The video is great. The video is excellent.
I all of a sudden felt super choked up. And that's when I thought to myself, why are we doing this song? Like, this is a great song and very moving.
What part made you choke up?
The last verse.
The last verse?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that when things get like really sad?
No, I don't know. It's the fifth and the sixth verse together.
God, that's so many verses.
Are really sad. Like the fifth verse is the most confrontational.
Yeah.
And then the sixth verse comes like back around almost to wishing for other times, or like the need for one another, even though things have gotten really bad. I don't know. And I just had like a lump in my throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you want to start off by reading the chorus for us here?
Yeah, we can. You know, I do remember the only reason why I thought this would be a good song to talk about.
Okay.
Because it's weird as a Christmas song.
Yeah.
Because it uses words like slut.
Yeah. And, oh, yeah.
And a
cigarette.
And a slur, like a homosexual slur. Right. And I was like, oh, that's weird for a Christmas song. Maybe we should talk about that.
All right, you got the chorus there?
Mm-hmm. The boys of the NYPD choir still singing Galway Bay, and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
I'll tell you what, I have sung along with that chorus for years and years and years while only really knowing the words Christmas Day.
Mm.
The rest of it was a mystery to me until I read the lyrics last week.
The boys. I knew it started with the boys and ended with Christmas Day.
So can we comment on this guy's voice?
Yeah. So I think the reason I didn't realize until I looked at the lyrics that this is a great song is that I could not understand anything this man was
saying.
He
certainly sounds hammered while he's singing it. He sounds like somebody, like watching the video about this Irish guy in a drunk tank, and the entire time they're just surrounded by like plumes of cigarette smoke. Mm-hmm. You get the impression after hearing his voice that his entire diet consists of booze and cigarettes. Like that's what he subsists on. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I mean, her voice is not as like crazy sounding.
Yeah.
But there were words in her verses as well. What's her name? Christy McCall.
Christy McCall, yeah.
In Christy McCall's verses that I just had never thought about what they were. And then when I listened next to, or when I listened while also looking at the verses, I was like, oh, I thought that said something else altogether. Yeah. It doesn't sound at all like the words on the page.
So let me tell you a little bit about Christy McCall. She got this gig because she was the wife of producer Steve Lillywhite. Steve Lillywhite, you want to laugh every time you hear his name. But
that is a ridiculous name.
It is a ridiculous name. Very famous producer, by the way. U2, Dave Matthews Band, Guster, others, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. He did not produce this song, though. The Pogues producer was Elvis Costello.
Really?
Yeah.
I see the Elvis Costello.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
You know, signature on this song. Yeah.
Now, Elvis Costello had evidently, he dared them that they couldn't write a Christmas hit song. So that's
all right.
So they ended up writing this song, which then went on to enter the UK charts 14 times. Now, there's a dispute there because their manager, Frank Murray, he claimed that it was his idea to write this song as well. But the urban legend is that Elvis Costello, who was producing them at the time, dared them to write a Christmas hit.
That's the story I prefer.
That's a better story. Mm-hmm. If we ever see the Pogues biopic,
I want to see that version of this song being created.
In there, yeah.
I don't want to just see their manager going like, hey, write this song.
Why don't you guys write a song about Christmas? Or doing a bunch of drugs.
Yeah, or about a heroin.
Can you write a song about an old slut on junk?
I bet you can't write a Christmas song about an old slut on junk. Challenge accepted.
And then songwriter Shane McGowan said, rah, rah, rah.
And then he did it.
Then he did it. Then he knocked it out of the park. Mm-hmm. Is it all right if I just launch right into verse one?
Yeah, I mean,
unless you want me to give a couple other factoids. I have a lot of factoids about this song.
Well, I think let's launch into verse
let's
one
launch
like
into
you
verse
suggested
one.
And we'll get the factoids. I'm ready for
all that. All right. This is the most, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Indecipherable verse. Just listening to it. This is somehow both a sing-along and not a sing-along song all at the same time.
It's my favorite kind of sing-along song where it's perfectly acceptable to just make sounds because that's all the
exactly.
singer is doing anyway.
Yeah. This Yellow Ledbetter by Pearl Jam.
And Send Me On My Way.
And Send Me On My Way. That's right. It was Christmas Eve, babe, in the drunk tank. An old man said to me, won't see another one. And then he sang a song, the rare old Mountain Dew. I turned my face away and dreamed about you. Can I knock out the second verse too? Just
yeah,
because
go
there's
ahead.
So many verses here. Got on a lucky one. Came in 18 to 1. I've got a feeling this year's for me and you. So happy Christmas. I love you, baby. I can see a better time when all our dreams come true. And then it like picks up, mm-hmm. you know, that's
big
where the
time.
Yeah. This song is not that long. It's like 4 minutes long.
These six verses go, well, the first five verses go shockingly fast.
Yeah.
And then there's a musical break and the sixth verse and you're out.
I mean, you don't even get to the chorus until after the fourth verse.
Right.
So then they just knock out those last. It's like four verses, a chorus, one more verse, a chorus, then another verse, then an outro.
Mm-hmm.
So it's wild.
So first of all, I just noticed that there's like foreshadowing in this first verse.
Ooh.
But I'll come back to that in a minute. I think that because as you said, this is a story song.
Yeah.
I think that's what's going on here is the Christmas Eve where he's in the drunk tank.
Yeah.
That's before their adventure begins.
Okay.
So, like, this is, from what I understand, the story of, like, a couple who is going to travel to New York to kind of start their life and try to make their
right.
dreams come true. They have some kind of ambitions tied
to...
Oh,
it's like that Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman movie,
just
Far and Away.
Exactly like
it's
that.
Exactly
I've
like
never
that.
Seen the movie.
Less heroin. A little bit less heroin in the movie, but...
But, like, for me, this is before the journey begins. On this Christmas Eve where he's in the drunk tank,
Yeah.
They're still in what wherever their hometown is.
Okay.
And he's, you know, chatting to this old man who's kind of washed up. The old man saying about himself that he won't see another Christmas.
Yeah.
And the protagonist turns away from that kind of maudlin thought and thinks about baby, whoever she is.
Yeah.
And that's when we get to verse 2, where it's like, our luck is changing. Came in 18 to 1. Is that like a gambling reference? Like, we had good odds?
I think it's a horse racing reference.
Okay.
Is what I believe.
It seemed like good odds to me, going with the luck. And he's, you know, communicating to her, I've got a feeling that things are going to get better from here. And this is the moment where all our dreams can start to come true. So I feel like it's only after this verse that they get to where, like, New York to try to.
Well, I agree with you there. Dreams. I think verse 1, it's like before he flashes back to better times.
Oh.
I feel like it's because this relationship went south. He went on a bender, and that's what got him thrown into the drunk tank on Christmas Eve.
So you're looking at it a little bit different,
Lee,
than I am. And I think that's interesting too. So you're basically saying verse one could also be verse 7. Like verse one comes after verse 6.
If you want to put this in like a linear timeline, yes.
And then verse 2 is the start of the journey, like just before they go off.
When he and his lady love decided to hop a boat and go all Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman on.
I like that idea. I could buy that too.
Yeah.
The foreshadowing that I see is the old man said to me, won't see another one.
Okay.
The old man who is commenting on like the end of his own life.
Yeah.
It feels like it parallels what's going on with the couple by the time you get to verse 5.
Okay.
And for lack of a better phrase, shit has really hit the fan.
Right.
And I guess I'll wait till we get to verse 5, but I'll point out the line that I think parallels this line from earlier in the song.
Okay. I do want to point out a couple of things that I neglected to mention earlier. So in the chorus, the boys of the NYPD choir were all singing Galway Bay. Mm-hmm. Galway Bay is an old traditional Irish folk tune, as is the rare old Mountain Dew. So the NYPD choir is singing one Irish folk tune. Old man in a drunk tank is singing a different Irish folk tune.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Mountain Dew is not the soda. That's what
he was not singing like the jingle for Mountain Dew soda. However,
it'd be funny if he was.
It'd be funny if he was. I don't really have any other factoids about this, but I do want to point out that the song Fairy Tale of New York was named after a novel by J.P. Donlevy, which was written in 1973. Have you ever read this book or heard of this book?
No, A Fairy Tale of New York? I haven't.
Well, evidently the songwriter Shane McGowan, who has the world's biggest gums, by the way, the man has gigantic gums, no chin, and a raspy voice.
And they filmed the entire video profile.
That is hard to look. He looks like Muppet-ish. He looks like an angry Muppet.
And as a person who also does not have a particularly strong chin, I would not like to have a whole video filmed in profile.
If only your gums were about twice as large.
I got some pretty serious gums in
You got
here.
Some pretty serious teeth. Your tooth to gum ratio is nothing compared to that of Shane McGowan, who I feel his T to G ratio is a solid 1 to 3.
Just as a side note to the folks at home, it was only about 2 weeks ago that I realized, after 36 years of living with this body, that I have huge teeth. Like, basically, I looked at you and your like average size teeth.
Stop.
And said out loud to you, I have really big teeth. And you were like, yeah, you do have big teeth.
I'm going to go around and just like pretend I've been like emasculated by my tooth size. Guys, I have perfectly average teeth.
Wife's teeth are huge.
It's not the size of your teeth, Katie.
It's the motion of your ocean.
Yes, it's the motion of your teeth's ocean.
Okay. So anyway, this was a revelation for me, a personal revelation. I wonder if Sean, what's his face, knows that he also, he doesn't have big teeth. He has big gums.
Shane McGowan?
Yeah, Sean, what's his face?
What's his face? Shane McGowan.
I only knew Christy McCall's name because I wrote it down. I love you, baby. I can see a better time.
When all our dreams. Good news for you, Katie, because you get to play the part of Kirstie McCall.
Oh, her name is Kirstie.
Kirstie McCall, like Kirstie Alley.
I definitely just said Christy.
Yeah.
every other time.
I think I did several times as well.
All right, well, our name's Kirstie.
But I want to warn you, Katie. Mm-hmm. Kirstie McCall's story takes a tragic turn.
Yeah, I've read the song. No, you mean her life story? Katie,
her life story is worse than this song.
No.
Sadder than this song.
No.
So, the former paramour of one Steve Lillywhite.
Oh, boy.
Let us honor her by reading this verse.
Okay. They've got cars big as bars. They've got rivers of gold. But the wind goes right through you. It's no place for the old. When you first took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me. See, actually, I think this supports, not necessarily, it could support the idea that the first verse is not a flashback. Or, I mean, is not present time.
Before you do that.
Okay.
Should we read verse 4 too?
Well, I just want to finish this thought. Because okay. She says, like, so, the first verse takes place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
And goes straight into the second verse where he's talking to her about, like, happy Christmas, better times are ahead.
Yeah.
And then in the third verse, she references, when you took my hand on a cold Christmas Eve, you promised me Broadway was waiting for me.
Okay.
So it feels like it could be that same Christmas Eve when he gets out of the drunk tank. Because he was thinking about her to make himself feel better. He goes straight to her, grabs her hand, and says, like, we're going to do it, babe.
Yeah. Bow chicka bow wow.
You know that's not what I meant.
See, here's, I think he's in the drunk tank on Christmas Eve, remembering a Christmas Eve in the past.
Fair enough.
Because by the end of the song, they're at each other's throats. They kind of hate each other.
Well, by verse 5, they're at each other's throats. And then,
do you think verse 6 is a reconciliation?
I don't know what verse 6 is. Yeah.
What's important to remember is that it could be taken either way, I suppose.
Sure.
There's no reason that it couldn't be either of those interpretations.
100%. I don't think this is a right or wrong situation. Yeah. I think this is one of those nice literary situations where, you know, an individual can support their perspective with the text, and as long as it feels logical, like, it is, it's all right, you know? Those are my favorite literary moments where, like, everybody can be right as long as you can defend it logically.
I feel like this verse reminds me, and I mean, perhaps they ripped off Don Bluth and company, but this, you know what I'm going to say?
This song
reminds me of There Are No Cats in America.
What?
The way they're like,
no cats in America.
That's the one. The way they're fantasizing.
The streets are paved with cheese.
Because the way they're like fantasizing about the streets and rivers of New York City.
The rivers of gold are the same as the streets paved with
cheese.
They've
got cars big as bars.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. And that strikes me as very Moskowitz.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it fits.
And American Tale came out the year before this.
Oh, maybe they did really rip it off. American Tale is one of my favorite childhood movies.
Okay.
And I would say that both that song in American Tale and this verse play into the fantasy of America that people have before emigrating here.
Yeah. Oh, especially when you're looking at, I mean, not necessarily this Pogue song, but kind of a period pieces from the early 20th century.
Absolutely.
Yeah, never say never.
Whatever you do. Should we just do more songs from
American
Tale? You want
to just discuss Don Bluth music? You want to just talk about that stuff?
No, we should stick with this. Can I tell you what I thought Cars Big as Bars sounds like?
Oh, please.
Calls Big as Balls.
Calls Big as Balls.
That's whatever that would mean.
What are calls, Katie? Aside from phone calls, cat calls?
Phone calls, big as tennis balls. I don't know.
What is that?
I'm just saying that that's what it sounded like. Like her
absolutely.
Pronunciation.
Yep.
Well, I just said pronunciation weird, so that's fun.
Yeah.
But her pronunciation sounded like calls big as balls.
That's her accent, Katie. It's perfectly normal in Ireland.
I'm not criticizing.
Okay. Why not?
It's really hard to criticize anything about this song.
Uh-huh.
Even calls big as balls.
There's an annotation here.
What, on Genius Lyrics or something?
Yes. The folklore of young Dick Whittington.
What?
Do you know who that is?
No.
Who naively sets off to London believing the, quote, streets are paved with gold, only to find himself cold and hungry.
I mean, that definitely sounds like what's happening in this song, but that doesn't have to be about Dick Whittington.
No, I have no idea who Dick Whittington is, to be honest with you.
That's a motif in storytelling from, I would say, the 19th through the 20th century that has to do with people coming from...
That is 14th century. Yowzers.
Oh,
Dick Whittington and his cat.
I don't know anything about that 14th century English Dick folklore. Whittington
story. All learning something this Christmas season, Katie.
But I am saying that this song is just following like a
well-recognized Yeah, absolutely.
Trope.
This is a well-worn road here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On a side note, can I tell you what the word pogue means?
Yeah.
So pogue has a couple of different meanings that I found. It's army slang. U.S. Army slang, which is often contemptuous, and it's for non-combat soldiers. So they'll call them like pogues. But
and it's an insult?
Yeah, it's a bit of an insult. However, in Gaelic, it means arse. And it's also a slang term for people that are unmanly or if they seem homosexual or dabble in pedophilia.
So are they basically just like the butts?
The arses.
Or the, well,
yeah.
That's the butts.
Or they're calling themselves unmanly homosexuals who may or may not dabble in pedophilia.
I'd rather think of them as the butts.
Yeah. Okay. No, I'm on board. These are the butts. Shane McGowan and the butts should have been their name, featuring Kirsty MacColl.
Mm-hmm.
These guys do not seem to be fans of the homosexual community, though. I'll tell you that much.
I don't know how to take those references. I mean, it is the late 80s, so it probably...
I mean, let's look at Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, I don't know whether it's coming from an intentionally homophobic place or not, but it kind of feels like it is.
Yes, it does feel like it is.
Did you want me to read the fourth verse? You asked me to, well, and then we got off on
I was going to say,
tangent.
For verse four, do you want to do the call and response?
Sure.
Because, I mean...
Is it just every other line?
No, it's I only have the one line.
Oh, I don't know where his line is.
The second one. So why don't you start on verse four for us?
Okay. You were handsome.
You were pretty, queen of New York City.
When the band finished playing, they howled out for more. Sinatra was swinging, all the drunks they were singing. We kissed on a corner, then danced through the night.
I only just realized that these guys don't rhyme. None of these really rhyme.
No, they're not too concerned with rhyme, but no, it works.
It does work.
There's a nice meter to it.
Oftentimes I criticize the rhyme scheme.
Oftentimes I criticize. Nicely done there.
Thank you.
You had a little internal rhyme there.
I would have criticized my own rhyme there. But I do often criticize, especially when it seems like they're desperately trying to rhyme things that mm-hmm. don't rhyme. Whereas here, there's no concern.
Yeah, I don't think that songs have to rhyme. And
no.
What can make songwriting really kind of labored and poor, for lack of a better word, is that forced rhyme. Those girl world situations where you just feel the struggle behind...
Girl, you know how much I hate that.
You feel the struggle behind the songwriter trying to keep this rhyme scheme at all costs and kind of sacrificing meaning in order to just like make a rhyme work. And here, it all comes across so naturally that you almost don't notice that it doesn't rhyme because it doesn't matter.
In part because of his gravelly voice.
You can't understand what he's saying anyway.
Oh, yeah.
What do you make of this verse?
I mean, they're talking about having like the times of their life. Mm-hmm. In New York City, in what I think is a past Christmas Eve.
Yeah. Now, in verse 3, things are taking a bit of a dip.
Okay.
You know, she does say the wind goes right through you. It's no place for the old. So there's this juxtaposition between all the excess of New York, the big cars, the rivers of gold.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's cold. And I don't think that it's just cold on a literal level. It's cold on a metaphorical level as well, where it's not necessarily an accepting place where it's easy to get by. You know, they're operating on this promise that Broadway was waiting for her. But there's some indication that things might not be as easy as one would hope.
Okay. I can see that. I don't know that it's intentionally that deep in that particular line, but I could see the case being made for that, I suppose.
I mean, I don't see why you would include it and include that juxtaposition and the clear use of the word but. Like, we have this good thing, but also this bad thing.
Right.
I don't see the point of that unless it's supposed to have some meaning behind it.
All right. Well, you're the smart one. So I'll just...
You're smart. But things are still going pretty well in verse 4. Like,
right. They're having a good time.
That's a fun moment.
Yeah. dancing.
Kissing on a corner.
I'm assuming New York, New York.
A heck of a town. No, that's a different New York.
That's
New
a different
York.
New York, New York. This is if I can make it there, I can make it anywhere in New York, you know?
Yeah.
They are filled with hopes and dreams.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the call and response?
I like it. All right. I think it's fine.
Okay. All right.
I think it establishes the good relationship between the two of them at this point in their story.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm really concerned with like what happened to Kirstie McCall, and now I'm just anticipating like you devastating me.
Oh boy, do you want to be devastated now?
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So Kirstie McCall died in December of 2000.
Okay.
And in what I think is maybe the worst way possible, she died in a high-speed motorboat accident. She was basically trying to save her children while they were swimming, and she got run over by a high-speed motorboat, which ended up killing her. Her children are fine, but she was killed. Now, where this stuff gets crazy is that the boat was evidently owned by a man named Guillermo Gonzalez Nova. And what he is a multimillionaire president of Comercial Mexicana, which is a supermarket chain. However, his employee, Jose Senyam claimed to be at the controls of the boat when this happened, even though eyewitnesses say otherwise. Eyewitnesses have said that Guillermo Gonzalez Nova was riding the boat well over the speed limit in shallow waters. But
so was she worried that the boat was going to hit her children?
Yes, that's
and what in an effort to save them,
correct?
She was fatally wounded.
Yes,
that's horrific.
Oh, it gets crazier.
No,
yeah. So this employee, Jose Senyam, was found guilty. He spent 2 years and 10 months in prison, or was supposed to spend 2 years and 10 months in prison. But in lieu of prison time, he paid a punitive fine of 1,034 pesos, which is the equivalent of about $90.
What?
Yeah. Then he also had to pay, this is based on his wages, the equivalent of about $2,150 to Kirstie McCall's family in retribution. But people who spoke to Jose claimed that he took the fall for his boss and was paid handsomely for it.
Oh, my God.
So there were all of these movements, these justice for Kirstie McCall movements that went on to try to, like, I guess, appeal this sentence. And it was finally laid to rest, I want to say, in 2010. I didn't write down when, but evidently that's when this movement stopped.
That is crazy.
Isn't that insane?
I don't like it.
No, nobody likes
it. No, I don't know why I said I don't like it. It'd be weird if I liked it.
Nobody likes it except for Guillermo Gonzalez Nova.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't like it either.
No, I guess if he had had his way, he wouldn't have murdered somebody on the open sea with his boat.
Like, that's horrific.
Right. Then he wouldn't have had to pay anybody to take the fall for him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Wild, right?
It is wild.
Oh, boy.
It is wild. Well, it's a good thing that we got that depressing tidbit out there.
Oh, Katie, that's my what the fact.
Oh, what the fact?
So you want a silver lining. There it is.
Yeah, we got to use a catchphrase we haven't used for a while.
That we haven't used for a while. Good for us, right?
Thank goodness something horrible happened so that we could use a catchphrase. I was going to say it's a good time for us to get this just depressing tidbit out there because the song is about to get pretty depressing too.
Less dark than that.
Yeah. Yeah, but still pretty dark.
You were pretty queen of New York City when the band finished playing. They held out for more. Sinatra was swinging. All the jokes they were singing.
You want to reverse gender roles on this one?
You want me to read the male part?
Yes, the second line.
Okay. Yeah, you got it.
You're a bum, you're a punk.
You're an old slut on junk, lying there almost dead on a drip in that bed.
You scumbag, you maggot, you cheap, lousy cigarette. Happy Christmas, you arse. I pray God it's our last. So I'm assuming that's where you were talking about the foreshadowing earlier in the song.
Yes. Which line do you think I was referring to?
I pray God it's our last.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a nice parallel in the writing, starting with this old man saying he won't see another Christmas, and then the prayer at the end here that this is our last Christmas.
Right.
And I think you could take that two ways. Like, I pray this is our last Christmas together.
Yeah.
But also considering the heroin references in the verse, like, it could be I pray God that, like, things are so awful. I pray to God this is our last Christmas, full stop.
Right. So can I tell you, I'm going to tell you.
I was going to say, you can tell me whatever you want.
Can I tell you, you're not going to say no. BBC Radio 1 decided to censor the song in 2007. McCall's mother called the decision ridiculous, and a representative for the Pogues said, quote, "This song now goes with Christmas like the Queen's speech and mince pies, and all of a sudden it's offensive. It strikes me as very odd, and I'm sure the band will be very amused."
So when you say censor the song, you mean they wouldn't play it altogether?
No, they just bleeped out the word cigarette.
Oh, okay. So that's a word for cigarette that rhymes with maggot, just for anybody who's not putting pieces together.
If anybody is that slow, there are
don't
other
call
stuff.
Our listeners slow.
If there is anybody who just doesn't get that. So, but there was also somebody, I forget who, there was another radio DJ who claimed that it was an Irish and Liverpudlian slang term for a lazy person.
Maybe it is.
I don't know. I've never been to Liverpool or Ireland, for that matter.
I've been to Ireland, but that doesn't make me the authority on that slang term. And I've also never been to Liverpool.
If any Irish or Liverpudlians are out there and want to fill us in on this particular slang term.
If Alice actually listened to the podcast, she could fill us in.
Yeah, maybe, but she doesn't. So that's shout out to Alice and Joe Shipley. Let's not forget him. Happy Christmas to you, Joe.
Well, maybe Joe can let us know about this
Newcastle.
Slang.
He's from Newcastle. He might have a better...
some insight.
Yeah.
Closer than New Jersey.
You know how many, like... pop songs are out there that drop the cigarette word?
I mean, not that many, actually. And I'm sure there are no other Christmas songs that
do. No other Christmas. I don't know. I've never done a Google search for that. But I'm thinking of Dire Straits' Money for Nothing says it an awful lot.
You said pop songs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a pop rock
song. You mean
song.
Like pop rock...
yeah, sure.
The whole shebang.
Absolutely.
Modern
popular
song.
Popular music songs.
Okay.
Green Day.
Yeah.
And they don't censor. Well, some stations will, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the radio censors that.
Yeah.
I think sometimes with older songs, like 60s, 70s, especially 70s, I guess, it just kind of sneaks in.
I mean, Money for Nothing is right in the heart of the 80s. That little
song.
Cigarette's got his own jet airplane. That little cigarette, he's a millionaire.
Twice. I had no idea.
Yeah.
See, I think it's sneaking in. I think it's sneaking in some of these songs.
Do you think people just like didn't notice
don't notice it's
don't
there.
Notice it now? Do you think the song has become such an iconic song that people just like overlook it?
I mean, I've heard that song a billion times.
Yeah.
I sing along to it when it's on. I had no idea that was in Money for Nothing. Exactly. And I know there are definitely a few Rolling Stone songs that I've heard on the radio more recently. Now, of course, I won't remember exactly what was said.
Is it Suck a Duck?
It's definitely Suck a Duck.
Suck a Duck, yeah.
All you people, you can suck a duck.
No.
That's definitely what I thought that song said.
Yep.
But no, just some like sort of cringy language that is still played on the radio. Like they don't bleep it out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think to myself, do they not know that that's there?
I'm thinking of like Green Day, American Idiot, and Holiday.
I feel like those songs were censored for the radio.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I also feel like for some reason, and I can't put my finger on why, Billy Joe Armstrong gets away with it.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We've both tried to defend something by saying I feel like, and our feelings
that's true.
Are not fact.
No,
so who knows,
not.
Really?
I can tell you for a fact that my feeling is
he gets away with it.
Yeah, so...
it's a fact that you feel that way.
Yes.
Whether or not he actually gets away with it, we don't know.
I feel like that's a fact.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, buddy.
You're a bum, you're a punk. You're an old slut and jumper, and they're almost dead on a trip in that boat.
Out this last verse so we can move on to the video.
Yeah, I could have been someone. Well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you. I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I've built my dreams around you.
So,
now, the first part is her.
Yeah.
Right?
No, the first part is him.
Could have been someone.
Then she responds, well, so could anyone.
Okay.
And then they sing together.
The rest of it.
The rest of it.
So they both sing, you took my dreams from me when I first found you. I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I've built my dreams around
you. Those last four lines might just be McGowan, not Kirstie McCall. Well, through the magic of editing, we've had the chance to go back and double check this.
Okay, so I'll break down the way this verse works.
Yes, please.
He says, I could have been someone. And then she says, well, so could anyone. You took my dreams from me when I first found you. And then he replies, I kept them with me, babe. I put them with my own. Can't make it all alone. I've built my dreams around you. I thought that was important because it emphasizes that by the end of the song, they're not in the same place.
Right.
About each other.
Uh-huh.
He is feeling that regret of his dreams not coming true, as it seems she is as well.
Right.
But she seems to be blaming him. And he seems to be wishing it had been better with them together. Like, he doesn't know how to get by without her.
Uh-huh.
But she feels like he really effed up her life.
So does this verse bookend with the first verse? Is this him back in the drunk tank singing to her from afar, somewhere out there, back to the American just looking through the bars of this NYPD jail cell.
Beneath this pale moonlight.
Beneath this pale moonlight, just like singing out to this lost love.
Maybe. I think you could definitely make that argument.
Yeah.
This was the part that made me feel so sad.
Okay.
Like, starting with her accusation of, you took my dreams from me when I first found you, but then also like his argument back that, like, I didn't take them from you, like stealing them in a negative way. I took them and I held them with me. I put your dreams with my dreams, and like that he built his dreams around her and that he wouldn't know how to get by without her.
Right.
Is incredibly tragic. And it just, that's, I think, when I got the lump in my throat.
I mean, she had dreams of that sick Manhattan black tar heroin.
No, you know? She had dreams of being on Broadway.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, it says.
I thought she was just going to go see a show on Broadway. You said Broadway was waiting for me.
I'm pretty sure. When the small town gal says Broadway's waiting for her.
It was an excellent production of Cats.
She doesn't want to just see Cats. She wants
Cats
to be in it.
Cats and Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Both running at the same time. They're making a live adaptation, a live movie adaptation of Cats.
I could not be less excited about that.
You love Cats.
I don't love Cats. Well, I love the animal Cats, but I actually don't love the musical
Would
Cats.
Would you ever name a pet Magical Mr. Mistopheles?
No, it's too much.
It's too much.
It's too much. It's too hard.
Rum-tum-tugger.
That always sounded a little dirty to me.
It does.
It does.
Why would you put the tum-tugger in any...
I'm going to say this and you can cut it out if you want to.
Yeah.
The tum-tugger makes me think of what you used to call a penis child, which was?
The belly bone.
Right. So the tum-tugger, the belly bone.
The belly bone.
Not, it doesn't seem right.
I'm going to go tug my tum.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Have a glass of rum.
Have a glass of rum. Tug my tum.
Tugger. Whatever that means.
You're holding your face.
At least we got some comic relief after this terribly sad song.
I think Kirstie McCall would have wanted it this way.
I guess so.
The video, huh?
It's bleak.
It is bleak. Did you see the big celebrity cameo in it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, my God, Katie. Yes, you did. It was huge. At the very beginning of the video, the police officer that is escorting Shane McGowan to his drunk tank, Matt Dillon.
What?
Yeah. Matt Dillon, who was friends with the director who happened to be shooting something nearby. So he agreed to come in and just play
a police officer in the video?
Yeah, just play a police officer. In fact, the Pogues had gotten so drunk and they had filmed this inside one of the precincts of the NYPD. And evidently the Pogues had gotten like so drunk filming at this precinct. Matt Dillon, who was like the only sober one there, he had to assure everybody that there wouldn't be any destruction of the police department. So
that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
That's absolutely ridiculous.
Right. Can I tell you my favorite factoid about the video though?
Of course.
So they have the actual, well, there was no actual NYPD choir. There's only the NYPD pipes and drums.
Okay.
Who we see in the video.
Yes.
They're all in their kilts. The guy's playing the big bass
drum. I assume those were actors. I was wrong.
No, those are the actual pipes and drums.
Oh, wow.
But they didn't know the song Galway Bay.
Okay.
So they slowed down footage of them singing a song that they did know, which was the theme song to the Mickey Mouse Club. And they, at one point, they got fed up and refused to keep filming unless they were supplied with more booze.
The police?
The police.
Yeah. So Matt Dillon was the only sober person there, including the police themselves.
Yeah, the NYPD pipes and drum.
Okay, that's cool.
So,
way to go, Matt Dillon.
How they get down on Christmas Eve.
I love this song.
I do too. Yes. In fact, VH1 had it listed 3 years in a row as the number one Christmas song. 2004, 2005, and 2006.
That's tough.
Yeah.
because I don't know that I would put it as the number one Christmas song.
Okay.
I don't like Christmas music.
Right.
But I also don't think that it does what Christmas music is supposed to do.
Yeah.
So it could be like the number one song rebelling against how crappy Christmas music is.
Okay.
But I don't know that I would personally put it as the number one Christmas song.
You know what I do like, though?
What?
Is a nice upbeat, jumpy Irish folk song with a sing-along.
The music in this is awesome.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
More penny whistle. Bringing it back to that rusted root again with more penny whistle.
Just words you can't understand at all and penny whistle. All you need for a good song.
Basically.
And That's what we're learning. Like,
that drum beat.
Yeah.
And the banjo that's playing there.
Oh, the collection of instruments.
Right.
And I couldn't possibly identify them all. That's not my wheelhouse.
Sure.
Just sounds fantastic together. And when, after the second verse, the song really picks up musically.
Yeah.
Wonderful. It's stellar.
So, and I think that's what kind of makes it better than your standard Christmas song. Christmas songs, you're usually hearing like the jingling bells and this like boppy little tune going on and, you know, nothing crazy. A lot of it sounds like kind of throwback to like 50s rock and real bouncy kind of sound, but putting that Irish sing-along element into it really helps it to like stand out as a great Christmas song,
as a great song.
I can listen to this all year round.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it transcends being a Christmas song.
Yeah.
And doesn't really fit the criteria of a Christmas song, but it's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree. You're not going to put this up against like Oh Holy Night.
Especially at a cabaret where you're honoring somebody's grandpa.
That's
right.
That's why I was thinking about that so recently. You wouldn't sing this song in church on Christmas Eve.
It'd be weird. It'd be weird.
Singing to your pastor, you old slut on junk.
Yeah. Or the two lines after that.
Right. So can you slap a grade on this?
A.
A? If you receive this as like a narrative poem.
I love it.
Yeah.
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 I love it.
I'm saying windows down, radio up. Barely singing along.
Just trying to sing along to the just howling sounds out the window.
I'm just glad I've memorized the chorus at this point.
Yeah.
Is really the means I can sing along.
But I'm definitely attempting to sing along, and I might like squeak out a tear in the final verse. It can happen.
Now that you know the story.
Yeah.
Now that you have all of the context.
Yeah, I think so. Beautiful Christmas song.
Beautiful Christmas
Beautiful
song.
Beautiful song?
A+ work, the arses.
The boys of the NYPD chorus are singing go away by, and the bells are ringing out for Christmas Day.
All right, well, everybody, thanks again for listening. Again, if you have any questions, comments, concerns, song suggestions, please shoot us an email. Our address is decompositionpod@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at @decomp_pod, Facebook and Instagram at @decompositionpodcast. If you would do us a favor this Christmas season, get yourself onto the Apple Podcasts, iTunes. Drop us a rating or review. Let us know what we're doing, good, bad, or otherwise. Please do us a favor. Tell your friends, tell your enemies about this. Again, like I've said before, we'd love to see this grow in 2019. Thank you guys again for listening, and you just chill till the next episode.